Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It's February 26, 2014. That's a Wednesday, just after 3 UTC. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is back with us again this week. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
You know, as I explained on last week's show, I screwed up all the scheduling last week. My fault this time.
Well, it doesn't happen very often that it's his fault. So, okay, so let's be clear about this. It's usually, whenever there's a scheduling thing, it's usually my fault. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, and schedule things happen. I mean, stuff was going on, you know?
Stuff was going on,
and
yes.
That happens sometimes.
Your wife had a birthday, heaven forbid,
For God's sakes. I know, and that's not really allowed, but, you know, okay.
Yeah, okay, all right. But, you know, it's, that kind of stuff happens, yes,
and,
you know.
Yeah, you know, and she'd probably rather it didn't, but, you know.
True, probably, yep. So,
although you got to think, you know, it's better to have the birthdays than to not have them.
Well, true, because that means you'd be dead. Yes, absolutely. So,
yeah. So, anyway, before we get on to the real topics, anything interesting of note in the last week to just, you know,
my son got freaked out by a killer whale.
Ah, okay.
I took him. Down here in South Florida, they call it a seaquarium, not an aquarium. And the reason why they call it that is because it actually sits on the sea, half of it, you know. So
yeah,
a lot of the stuff is like right actually on Biscayne Bay. So we took him on Sunday, all right, okay, over there, which was like I don't know what the hell happened with the traffic on Sunday, but traffic was insane. Okay, it was just ridiculous. So it took for the only reason I didn't turn back home out of the traffic is because I couldn't get out of the traffic jam. Okay, all right, because at one point it took 2.5 hours to drive a stretch that was 4 miles long.
That's nice.
Yeah, and I was like, this is just, you know, never happened before. But anyway, we get there.
Could have walked.
Well, we had to leave the car, and that would have been bad. Okay, all right, where we had to leave the car. So anyway, we get there, and he was happy with the dolphins, and he was happy with the sea lions. So we took him to the grand finale of the place was that they do have a killer whale and do a show with the whale, all right? Well, let's just say that seeing this gigantic being jumping up and down in the water scared the shit out of my son.
I can understand that.
You know, it just really freaked the hell out. So that was not the reaction I expected. I gotta say, I thought he would find it cool. He liked the dolphins jumping up and down in the water and the sea lion doing his thing and all that stuff.
But the whale's a lot bigger.
Not the massive killer whale jumping up and down in the water.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Now, and I take it you weren't, you know, like I haven't actually.
I was not in the splash zone.
Yeah, I understand. I haven't watched any of these things, but you've seen a lot of stuff going on recently about, you know, articles and documentaries and stuff about how these things aren't really treated all that well at these places. You're not worried about that at all?
Well, you know, we had a discussion about that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Actually, when we were there. Because I have heard the stories, but like everything, you know, you hear stories from one side, you hear stories from the other side. The people on the other side claim that these people are talking out of their ass, that that's not true, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I was thinking about it, you know, let's face it, I mean, a lot of them are getting hunted, okay, all right, killed, right? So the argument I had, somebody said, you know what, so they live here, right? The staff, they say, treats them very well, and they're not out there being hunted, okay? You know, and they get fed. I mean, I don't know. Is that so bad? I don't know. I wasn't going to get into debate about that because then it gets into debate about everything about zoos and why they exist and so forth and so on. And even that debate, which is...
And we a few weeks ago, we didn't talk about the thing with the giraffe they killed in Europe.
Yeah, I thought we did.
No, we considered it as a topic, but we didn't actually talk about it.
Okay, yeah, no. And so, I don't know. You know, look, it's... You can make an argument either way. I don't know. I'm on the fence on the whole thing at this point. So, yeah, I will say this: it wasn't my idea actually to go to the show. Friends of ours, they've got a child that's very close to our age, And we said, well, let's get together on Sunday and say, well, we're going to the Sequarium. And we were like, well, okay, well, you know, okay, we're going. It wasn't like, it wasn't really like our real call to, for us to go out there. Because I think if I thought about it, I probably, that wouldn't have been the plan myself. But, yeah, but we went, yeah, and the show was fun, you know?
Yeah, and you know, like, I'd say I'm probably in the same, like, I don't really know. I'm certainly less comfortable with all of these things, zoos, aquariums, everything else, than I was, you know, a decade ago. Mm-hmm. But I think it also varies incredibly between facilities.
Yeah.
Like, some are just crap.
Yeah.
And some do a really, really good job at sort of environments that are as close as possible to the natural environment, blah, blah, blah. Lots of space to roam, etc. And I guess you don't really have that with, like, what you're talking about. They still have, like, a pool, which is still pretty small for something used to running around an ocean.
Right.
But, like with zoos, you know, you've got the kind of zoos that have, like, the elephants in a really small enclosure, and you've got the kind where they've got a huge pasture to roam around on, and there's a difference, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, listen, we have, like, you know, my whole thing, I used to have a dog. I don't have a dog anymore, but let's face it, we have domesticated certain animals, and we've kept them in our home, right? Let's face it, over time, dogs were not in homes. We've domesticated them. A lot of it, you have a dog, you know.
You have a dog.
I mean, I'm like, you know, let's face it. Is the house where he stays in a much significantly smaller environment that they used to be in hundreds, thousands of years ago?
Well, yeah, but there's a difference between an animal that's been domesticated for tens of thousands of years.
But why is that?
And a creature that was wild, it was born wild, and you bring it in, you know?
But it used to be wild. It takes some time for something to be domesticated. It doesn't happen overnight. What happened to the first? So what about the first dogs? Were they torturing those first dogs?
Oh, most likely, yes. How do you think they got domesticated?
Well, shit. So now it justifies the fact that, I don't know. Anyway, look, oh, it could be another. You could go on a debate forever. I'm not going into this damn debate.
Okay, so we have some real topics today. We're going to talk about Bitcoin. They had a little issue recently.
Just a tad.
We're going to talk about Venezuela. Because Ivan doesn't want to talk about the Ukraine, because Ukraine's getting all the coverage and Venezuela is getting shortchanged. And I mentioned that a little bit. There's sort of tiers of these. Ukraine, it's easiest to find out about Ukraine. Venezuela is second. And actually, third is Thailand, where some things have been going on, too. And you barely even hear about that at all.
I haven't heard a thing.
See, there's this, you know, same kind of stuff has been happening in Thailand. But no one cares about Thailand. And then the WhatsApp purchase, I talked about it a little bit last week, but as I said then, I was sure Yvonne was going to have more to say about it this week. So we got that on the agenda. And there have been a few states where they've been pushing some laws to make it, well, it bottom line, make it okay to refuse service to gay people if you don't like them, if it's a quote unquote strongly held religious belief. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. So there's the show.
All right, so let's get started then.
So you wanted to start with the anti-gay laws. And I said there might be a little bit of controversy here. And this is because I am going to take the unpopular position here. And I've mentioned this, in fact, before on the show in regards to, you know, the civil rights laws of the 60s, too, which is that I want to start with, and I want to make this absolutely clear to start with, I think anybody who actually engages in the kind of discrimination we're talking about against gay people or other groups is repugnant. Their businesses are repugnant, and anybody with any sense should probably not do business with them. However, and this goes in line with a lot of other things that I talk about, I think in general, it shouldn't be the government's business to tell people what to do with their private enterprises. And I think it's completely and totally different for, you know, government enterprises, public things, things that take public funds, you know, universities that take public money, all of that kind of stuff. But if you own a small business and you do whatever you want with that, let's say it's you know, a florist, because that's come up a few times in this case. Let's say it's a restaurant. Let's say it's whatever. If you own a small business, I think it should be the business owner's absolute and total right to decide who they want to do business with on any criteria they want whatsoever. If they don't like the way you look, if they don't like your race, if they don't like your religion, if they don't like your sexual orientation, if they don't like the hairstyle you have that day, if they don't like the color shoes you wear, they should be able to tell you to leave. Now, I think they'd be incredibly stupid to do so, but I don't think it's the proper role of government to tell business owners to who they should or should not do business with. I think that's, it's just not something government should be involved in. I think, and again, entirely different if you're taking government funding for your business, if you're a government contractor, if you are the government yourself, etc. And again, I think that, you know, the businesses who are stupid enough to discriminate on any of those measures, deserve to lose that business, and B, deserve for other people to say, you're horrible, I'm not going to do business with you either.
I think you have way too much faith on people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. Because the reality is that the reason why those laws are on the books is because there's a lot of assholes
out
there. And the problem that that causes is people were being denied the right to transportation, the right to food, the right to basics like going to a university or a school or any right to basic service. Well, and the reality is that even today, though we have a black president, let me tell you something. There's a lot of fucking assholes out there. And the reason why those laws are on the books is to prevent people from being discriminated from, for example, getting a house,
yep,
having a place, having a job, or a lot of things, and so people could take action against scumbags that, because unfortunately there's still way too many fucking of them out there.
I understand, and I don't for one minute pretend that if you said, you know, it's okay to do all this stuff, that miraculously people wouldn't do it. People would do it. I just think it's their right to be assholes. And now, and this is where I distinguish, like, you know, it should not be okay for governments to do so. Like, if you're talking about public buses and stuff like that, but you know, private entities should be able to choose what they want to do with their own stuff.
No. If your business is open to the public, it's got to be open to all of the public. It's not a private club.
Well, and one thing I will point out right now is that's actually not true anywhere in the country, except for the specific protected classes, which, you know, race, right, gender, there's exactly, like five of them.
Right.
But like, yes, you know, one of the interesting things, and, you know, Anderson Cooper had on somebody talking about Arizona yesterday and actually completely grilled them and completely won the argument, because the guy in favor of these laws either didn't know what he was talking about or just didn't want to admit it on TV. Alex, hi.
That he wanted to discriminate, yes.
Alex, what are you saying? Ghost trainees. Instead of Ghostbusters. Oh, okay. Go. Mommy's going to play with you.
Ghost trainees.
Okay, I got to keep talking. Alex,
how about soda?
Mommy's going to get you soda. Go. Okay. Yeah, can you close the door too when you go? Take Roscoe too.
Roscoe.
Okay, he can stay. Anyway, look, I am under no illusions that a lot of people would be dicks, and in many places the world would be worse off. But I think fundamentally, like, I look at it on a small scale. If you are an individual running your small business and Joe Bob comes in and you don't like Joe Bob, why do you have to do business with him? even if your reason for not liking him is completely irrational and stupid.
I think that, let's face it, you asked a specific question.
Okay, go.
I've turned away people that I have refused to do business with, okay? I have done that, okay? All right? Not very often, but I have, okay? The reasons why they have been is because I've had a guy, for example, come into my business and be abusive.
Yep.
To me and my staff, and I basically threw him out, okay? Mm-hmm. Those are the only reasons. However, I will tell you that one of the things... And there's a good reason for these losses that you can make a presumption because of somebody's appearance or somebody or whatever, like somebody doesn't have money or you think that whatever, when those people, it may just be the appearance, but they are the most respectable people and they want to do business. Yeah. And the other thing that you have is that you have certain people that maybe have the most slickest, best appearance and they're broke, stealing motherfuckers, okay, that are not interested in buying anything. The reality is that appearances are extremely deceiving, okay, when you're doing business. And I think that the fact that we protect certain classes because there's a lot of bigotry out there is an important right for people to make sure that they can get the things that they need, okay?
So let me ask you a question.
That doesn't mean that you as a businessman can't go and turn down somebody for business. You better have a very good fucking reason, okay, for doing so, and I believe the times that I did, I did have a very good reason. So therefore, if they decided to go against me because of it, I had very good reasons.
So I have two questions there. First, I understand sort of the, you know, critical services that you can't get elsewhere. Like there are certain things, like I mentioned, like buses,
housing,
buses. You know, there's the public buses, but like, you know, interstate buses are completely private. There's no public network of like, you know, cross country travel, like, and Amtrak's semi-public. So let's forget Amtrak for a second, but you can't go and fly a federally funded airline or bus across the country. I would be amenable to something that said there's certain classes of service, not just any public business, but certain classes of service that are sort of critical key services for survival. Let me let the dog go.
Roscoe, here you go. Go.
Okay. There's certain key classes of service that are sort of, you know, like you said, housing, food, education, things like that, where, okay, maybe I can buy, okay, let's say that these services are critical enough to the society at large that you should not have, that you should mandate, you know, there has to be a good reason if you deny somebody access. And maybe we don't even have a specific list of protected classes, because I think that's stupid. But just you have you have to have a reason that's related to the business, not just I don't like them.
Right.
And you know, we have those kinds of things on. We have the protected classes in employment law too. You can't hire or fire based on, you know, the guy's race or whatnot.
Right.
How about, you know, you have that on protected classes, but if I have some random business that's not a critical infrastructure thing, that's not like critical to human survival, why the fuck can't I just say, you know, I don't like him. I'm not going to do anything with him. And I don't like him because, you know, he's not Episcopalian. I don't like him because, you know, whatever reason you might make up, including he's gay or he's black or whatever. I mean, the guy's,
you know, because I think, you know, because I think the reason why you don't have those distinctions is because, let's face it, like 50 years ago, we had a society that went and segregated a group, a significant portions of this country into not being able to do quite a lot of things. Okay. by not having these laws into place. And if you start just limiting it to certain specific areas, it really opens up Pandora's box of limitation. I think that the reality is that we have these laws because this country was very fucked up in how it discriminated against significant. Yes. Because there was no other way of changing this country if that hadn't been done that way.
And you know, let me step back a second, because to some degree, I've been playing devil's advocate here intentionally. I mean, I generally do believe, you know, businesses should be left to themselves for the most part. But on the other hand, a lot of this is sort of settled principles that have been there for decades now that you stated it very succinctly. If you're a business that's open to the public, you're supposed to serve everybody. Yeah. And you know, and I think, you know, whether or not government should be involved in that, I think, you know, I hesitate and I feel conflicted. I don't want government to have to be involved there, but I fully say that's the way it should be. Yeah,
history
has
indicated that without the damn laws, people didn't get served.
Yeah,
that's what happened. They were massively discriminated. They were segregated. They were treated, you know, people couldn't get a whole bunch of shit. So historically, what it's shown is that when we didn't have the laws in place, it didn't work.
So, you know, and so some of the examples here, though, are like, you know, a florist refusing to provide flowers for a gay wedding. You know, is that really such a critical issue that we should have the government mandate that they have to? Another example that's not quite the same thing, but is related, is you used to run a pharmacy, but there are pharmacies who have been like, I morally object to the morning after pill, so I'm not going to provide it. It should that be okay? You know, should we make them sell something they don't want to, or sell to somebody they don't want to? I mean, we're not talking about a critical infrastructure thing here.
Let me tell you something. If they believe that, then, let's not sell contraception. Let's not sell this. Let's not sell that. I mean, what the fuck? What kind of pharmacy are you running, man? Are you running science, or are you running a fucking pharmacy? Are you fucking a religious organization?
Well, but let's say they are. Let's say they don't want to sell any of that. They don't want to sell any birth control. They don't want to sell any contraception. They don't want to sell morning after.
Well, I will say this. I have a little bit of a difference in terms of like me not stocking product. Right. Okay. All right. I choose not to say, you know, hey, we used to sell cigarettes at the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. We stopped. All right. We chose not to. I mean,
There are a couple. There was a major pharmacy that just announced Walgreens that they're not going to either.
I think it's Walgreens or CVS. I can't remember. Yeah. What are the two? They said they're not going to sell cigarettes anymore. And I'm like, yeah, and it was a big revenue, but yet at the same time, the reason to stop 20, 30 years ago selling cigarettes is like is contradictory to our mission of like providing health.
Right, but like for instance, in this case, and I mentioned the morning after pill because there were lawsuits about this, and this went into court, and there et cetera was happening here because I don't think
it's discriminatory. The
owners of those pharmacies said that they were morally opposed, and they thought this was contrary to their mission too because you know it killed a fetus or whatever, and so they argued that, and I believe. There was actually a ruling that said they actually had to carry this because it was part of being a prescription. They had to fill it or whatever. And I don't remember exactly how that ended up, but I remember it got litigated. And it seems to me the same kind of thing where in these questions, they're couching it. Look,
Here's the one thing. There's all sorts of different things. One thing is me refusing to provide a certain service to a person that comes in.
Yep.
I think that there's a difference between me refusing to sell a certain product.
Let's get back to the anti-gay stuff.
I don't know. Maybe I refuse to stock Astrolube, for God's sakes. I mean, I don't know. Shit. I mean, I just choose not to sell it. I mean, what the fuck?
So let's get back to the specific anti-gay examples here. Now, first of all, I also want to eliminate an illusion. I don't think, in all honesty, as much as this is being couched as protection, like the way this is being couched by the people pushing these laws,
it's not religious protection.
Because they're couching it as religious protection and protecting people who morally object from with homosexuality from being persecuted and forced to do things that they feel morally against. And that's bullshit for a number of reasons. First of all, guess what? These businesses have been serving homosexuals for decades without nary a word. And okay, the florist with the gay marriage thing, okay, that's an interesting edge case, whatever. But for the most part, this is bullshit. Like, there may be a principled case to be made on the religious freedom grounds, but I think that's just opportunistic here. This is a bunch of people who are scared that homosexuality is becoming accepted and normal, trying to fight back against it. And it's clearly the intention is discriminatory against these. The other thing, and this was also pointed out by Anderson Cooper in the clip I listened to from his show the other day, is homosexuals aren't a protected class. You don't even fucking need these laws. Anybody right now, this very instant, in any almost any state in the country, there have been a few localities and states that have passed laws protecting homosexuals. But in almost any state, and certainly in Arizona, with the exception of a couple towns, it is actually right now, without any new laws being passed, already perfectly legal for the owners of small businesses to say, sorry, we don't serve homosexuals. Because they're not currently a protected class. So right. These laws would actually do jack shit. They're just, and this is where I think this is.
It's just a statement that we're bigots. We're big fucking right. And bigots. And so, and we want to publicize it nationally.
Exactly. I mean, that's and it. So, I was playing devil's advocate a bit at the beginning because, you know, in an ideal world, I don't think government should be involved in these things, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel a little bit queasy about laws like this. However, at the same time, what's happening here is not really about, yes, there's an underlying religious conservative thing going on here, but this is not about protecting people's religious liberties. We're not asking, you know, people who have a moral objections with homosexuality to become homosexuals. We're not asking them to watch gay porn. We're not asking them to do any of this. They're just being, you know, hey, serve the people if they come in, you know? And what's happening here is I think this is another instance of, you know, the folks who are doing these efforts. It's like a last ditch effort. But what it does is marginalize them even further, because like if you were and you see this already with like a lot of mainstream Republicans already saying this is nuts. What the hell are you thinking? Don't do this, because it just makes the people backing these laws look even more marginalized and out of step with where the country is moving and how people are thinking. And yes, in those particular states and areas, that's a little bit less true than if you're talking about the country as a whole, and certainly not if you're comparing it to, you know, liberal states, you know, your New Yorks and your Californias and stuff. But all you're doing is proving to everybody else that you're just a bunch of assholes. You know, and so regardless of any principled position you may or may not have on this, if you're pushing it in this direction, you know, like you said, settled norms in this country since the civil rights movement is if someone comes into your store, you serve them. And doing this is just an asshole dick move that makes everybody think, you know, what at best, what morons, and at worst, What assholes?
You're just massive bigots. That's all that you are. That's all they are. I mean, you know.
And so I think this is another thing that's like, it's backfiring completely on the folks.
Well, the Arizonans, for whatever the hell, the Arizona legislature, let me not say the people of Arizona. Yeah. Well, they did elect these morons, but I mean, the Arizona legislature over the last few years has proven quite adept at just being quite anti everybody, apparently, unless you're very white. So, I don't know. I don't know why this is such a pattern with them.
And so I mentioned other states. So just to be complete, I found a reference. There's a article on Talking Points memo called Not Just Arizona by David Kurtz, published on February 25th. And it just lists the similar bills, not just Arizona. Similar bills have been introduced in Tennessee, Kansas, Idaho, and Mississippi, and Georgia.
Well, yeah, but apparently none of those actually passed.
None of those passed. And Arizona, it's passed the legislature, but it looks very much like the governor's going to veto it. So it's not going to go anywhere in Arizona.
I mean,
either,
if she didn't veto it, she would be the ultimate. I mean, she's a fucking moron. I mean, because I get that the legislature passed it, but good God almighty. I mean, if she doesn't veto it, I mean, dude, there's even talk. I mean, even the NFL was saying, basically, fuck. I mean, really? If they do this, there's a Super Bowl scheduled to be in frickin' Arizona. I mean, they're thinking about fucking, like, pulling the Super Bowl out of Arizona.
Right.
I mean, that's how bad this has gotten, all right?
Well, and there was lots of talk of a variety of companies doing that kind of thing and saying, you know, if this is the state's policies, we're not comfortable doing business here.
That's right.
Now, you know, should that be okay? The business is discriminating against the whole damn state because of what a few of their elected officials did.
But you see, they're discriminating against everybody in the state. They're not picking and choosing.
You're picking and choosing between states. You know, and in fact, anything where you're making a choice, you're discriminating against somebody.
Yeah, well, we're going to discriminate against you at some point. I mean, I don't know. I got to figure out what, but I haven't come up with it yet.
You know, there are many, many things that you could discriminate against me for. You know, I'm sure you could find a few. But
I'll have to figure it out.
Yeah, but, you know, look, the bottom line is... Yeah, and you've been seeing this in a few other areas. I mean, you've been seeing this in some of the legislation that's come up about... women's health issues as well. Even aside from, you know, the main abortion debate, which, you know, we're not going to get into that right now. But
yeah, please, let's not.
Yeah, that's an interesting one too. But, you know, there have been so many places where there have been local Republican leaders who are even to the right of the right wing folks in the Congress, like, and that's saying something.
Yeah.
But who have been pushing these things that are extremely marginal on a nationwide scale that maybe can get passed in a state legislature that's highly Republican in a red state, but which on a national scale, again, just everybody, you know, in everybody who's not a red person in a red state looks at this and goes like, what are they doing?
Right.
And, you know, if we're looking beyond, you know, the short term immediate thing in that local state, this is what kills the Republicans. And you know, certainly the Democrats have gone off on the edge a few times in history too, but right now it's the Republicans who are very susceptible to this kind of thing, because and the perception is very much that these folks are, what's the bottom line? They feel like the world is leaving them behind because the world is changing. The world is becoming, America specifically, is becoming less white, less Christian, less traditional, and there are all kinds of new things, and they're scared of it, and they're going to do everything they possibly can to claw back and try to recreate the 1950s, or in some cases, the 1930s.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. It's
or the 1830s.
1850s, actually, probably. They would love that, I'm sure. 1840s, yeah.
Yeah,
that,
you know, so...
Right deal.
And you know, and I'm reminded, I keep... You know, the metaphor that keeps coming back when you hear about these kinds of things is, and I'm going back a ways, but when Bob Dole ran for president and his speech at his convention... talked about being a bridge to the past. And then Bill Clinton came out 2 weeks later at the Democratic convention and said, they're a bridge to the past. We're the bridge to the future.
Future.
You know, and this is the, I keep getting that visual when these kinds of things happen. It's like, okay, yeah, I understand that you felt more comfortable in the cocoon of the 1950s where, you know, everybody was white and Christian and traditional, and everybody did things a very certain way, and everybody lived in small towns, and that wasn't really true in the 50s either, by the way, but, you know, these people think it was, you know, and no, that's not the way the world is. I'm sorry. And the more you hang on to that, the less, you know, the more you're going to be left behind in the long run. And you may have some battles won here and there on individual things. But in the end, you know, those kind of attitudes are going to lose. And you know, and we've said before, there's a lot of, you know, ideas in various parts of the Republican Party in terms of, you know, fiscal responsibility and small government and this and that and that have a lot of resonance that could have, you know, it could even build coalitions that, you know, could win national elections. But as long as they're being pulled down by the baggage, you know, of, you know, racist, homophobic, anti-science parts of the party, they're screwing themselves. Yeah, at some point they have to ditch all that if they want to succeed.
Yeah, well, not happening anytime soon. Anyway, we need to take a break.
Yes, we do. Okay, we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk about some of the other things on our agenda. Back after this. Okay, we're back. After that marathon 37-minute section.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, taking a tad long. Let's go.
Well, but, you know, to be fair.
Bitcoin!
To be fair, the first 10 minutes or so were about, like, aquariums and zoos.
And true.
Yeah, we should have taken a break in between, but, you know, whatever.
Right.
Okay, Bitcoin. You want to talk about Bitcoin?
Bitcoin!
I will say, it hasn't... What was your prediction for the year? Was it would drop below 250? It didn't quite make it that low, I don't think.
I can't remember.
Or was your prediction 500? Because if it was 500, you won. But I think it was 250.
I think it was 500.
Yeah, we'll have to go back and listen to the show someday.
Yeah.
But anyway,
Yeah, but bottom line is that Bitcoin imploded this week.
Well, it started to recover.
Well, yeah, but we'll see how long that lasts. At this point.
Well, so let's say what happened. The what used to be the biggest Bitcoin exchange, Mt. Gox, which, you know,
one that Sam was trying to open an account in.
And you know, I failed because it was such a pain in the ass to do it. Otherwise, I would have bought my $50 worth of Bitcoins there. But it was such a pain in the ass. I went somewhere else. I went to Coinbase, which is, from all reports so far, a little bit better. Or maybe a lot better. But anyway, Mt. Gox, almost a month ago, started having problems where people couldn't withdraw their money anymore. Because they were having internal technical issues, and they started, you know, saying, okay, we're working on it, temporary hold and withdrawals. Like, you could still exchange Bitcoin for Bitcoin, but you couldn't exchange Bitcoin for dollars or something like that. I forget the details. But they finally, just in the last 48 hours before we're recording this, the site went offline completely.
Right.
And there were...
I just heard it went back up with a message saying...
Yes, it went back
we're
up.
Closed.
We back up with a question. They're closed. But also leaked was a PowerPoint document talking about emergency plans for Mt. Gox. And part of what was revealed there was that apparently there was a security flaw in how they dealt with transactions. And I believe it was around 775,000 Bitcoins were just missing. And, you know, you can do the math. Before all this hit, Bitcoins were running at around 600 dollars each or so. 600 times 750,000, decent chunk of change.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that stuff's just gone.
Gone.
Well, and I shouldn't, gone not in the sense of doesn't exist anymore. Gone in the sense of somebody stole it.
That's what I don't understand. How the fuck did they just steal it? Didn't anybody notice their money was missing?
Well, this was part of the problem. Well, no, the part of the problem is the way that these are structured. The exchange was keeping track of that sort of stuff, and transactions happened, and the exchange, Mt. Gox, was not doing all the things necessary to fully track what was going on. And so someone was able to essentially reclaim the money that was already there through a number of tricks that, you know, aren't nominally the right way of doing stuff, but it was a flaw that if they had been watching the right way for, could have prevented from happening, but they weren't. And I don't understand the technical details, so I'm just fudging that there. But basically, there are a number of ways where basically you take possession of the particular bits of code that represent that coin, and you can make off with it.
Apparently.
And there may be, you know, the fundamental way Bitcoin works is it should be somewhat traceable. Like, it's all anonymous, but you should be able to say this money went this place. But I think part of the problem was there were there's a certain thing you could do that would make it look like it went two places at once. I don't know. Let me not even get into the technical details because I don't understand them. The bottom line, lots of money gone. You know, they don't have, you know, it's sort of the equivalent of a bank run here because they don't have, you know, the cash to make good on these Bitcoins if people were withdrawing them all. And so confidence completely lost. The bottom line is they're changing the management. They've got an emergency strategy to try to, like, you know, take donations and other things to make up for it, and then to try to do rebranding and stuff to rebuild confidence. But the rest of the Bitcoin exchanges around the globe are basically saying, okay, they fucked up royally. We're still doing it right. We're gonna sort of bolster things to try to keep things going, blah, blah, blah. But Mt. Gox is dead, and they probably, you know, they're going to try to come back, but who's the guy who's going to be the first one to jump into the new Mt. Gox, you know? Regardless of if it's branded, like when the last people lost their money. And this whole thing points out to everybody that who knows what other, you know, how do we know that these other exchanges have patched all the security flaws and are tracking all this stuff properly, and they won't go out of business and lose all our money? There's no equivalent of the FDIC for Bitcoin exchanges.
Right.
You know? And yes, there are also ways that you can yourself, you know, take possession of the Bitcoin and keep it on your computer. But we all know the problems of keeping files on our own personal computers. You know, there are all kinds of ways that can get fucked up, you know? And yes, you can do backups and this and that and blah, blah, blah. But you know, there are Bitcoin wallets where you can keep the Bitcoin on your computer. You can keep the Bitcoin on your smartphone. There are even ones where you basically, they're actual physical coins that have, like, basically an embedded USB key that you keep it on there. Yeah, there are all kinds of options, but they all have their downsides as well. So it all makes you think, like, what really is the security of this? You know, if I have $50,000 in the bank, I know I'm getting back that $50,000.
Right.
Even if the bank gets robbed, even if the bank goes out of business, even if this, even if that, you know, I know I'm getting my 50 grand. If I have my $50,000 in Bitcoin, I could turn around the next day and find out it's gone. Or at least I can't get access to it, which is effectively the same thing. And so confidence dropped. Now, you know, when this hit, the price was in the 500s. It dropped down to, it looks like, exactly 400 or so was low. Although, you know, this is another thing we talked about the other time. There's arbitrage here because the price of Bitcoin on different exchanges is not all synced. But I'm looking at Bitstamp right now, the price on Bitstamp, which is one of the folks that tracks these things. Their list, it went down to 400, but then it was again in the high 500s, you know, by the end of the day. by now. Let's see, what's the actual price right now? I don't know. I'll look it up in a second. But anyway, it went from the 500s down to 400, back into the high 500s again. So is there permanent damage here, Don? I don't know.
I think there is. I got to tell you, I think there is. Because, let's face it, man. I mean, who the hell is just going to go right now and just say, oh, yeah, let me just stick all my money in Bitcoin?
Well, tell you what, you know, buy low.
That may be a thinking, but let's face it. If you could, but listen, that's an arbitrage opportunity to make money off of that specifically.
Yeah.
But that is not necessarily, hey, let me, you know, let's face it. If you want to keep your cash, you're better keeping it in U.S. dollars or euro.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, okay, because look at how
well. But again, this gets back to what are these things used for? And so there's two things that Bitcoin have been used for. One is pure fucking gambling speculation. Buy yep. some, hope it goes up. You're not like putting your paycheck in Bitcoin. You're putting $500.
Some people
may. Yeah, maybe, but you know, for the most part, like if the one mode is you're putting $500 on black to see if you win some money. Okay? That's use number one. Use number two is you're just using it as a medium of exchange to buy something particular across borders or anonymously or with less of a transaction cost than you would otherwise, where you're not keeping it for any length of time. You're buying something that costs $500, so you buy $500 worth of Bitcoins and 10 minutes later, you transfer it to somebody else to buy whatever you're going to buy, and then they immediately transfer it into their local currency. And in that case, in that second case, you don't give a shit what the price is because you're only going to keep the damn thing for 10 minutes anyway.
Right.
You're just using it as the mechanism of exchange to smooth out, to not worry about having to transfer dollars to euros to yen or whatever, and to not worry about all of the, all of the traceability and tracking and identity that's sometimes associated with those actions. If you wanted to move, you know, if you wanted to move $100,000, you know, from Peru to Russia, yeah, this might be a pretty good way to do it.
I agree. Okay, if that's the kind of stuff that you're looking at doing, but if you're looking for some kind of safe way to store a lot of your savings,
which of course, when you talk about a currency,
like, and I'm talking about. You know, thinking about a currency, I'm thinking about, say you're a Venezuelan or you're an Argentinian, yeah. Right? Massive inflation, deflation, all this stuff, right? Would you stick your money in dollars or you stick your money in Bitcoin?
Well, the one question there is, do you care about, you know, it potentially being traced or taxed or things like that? Because, you know, in dollars, you're much more likely to get all that.
They're worried about that, but that's why they keep it in cash, in actual bills.
Right.
Okay, all right? These people, they care about that traceability. So that's why they estimate right now that in Argentina, there's in savings, there's like $200 billion in hard currency, U.S. dollars.
Like actual bills on your mattress.
Bills. Yeah. Yes. All right? So... Okay, so there goes your concern about traceability. All right.
Yeah.
So the question is, you've got two untraceable sources: A, stacks of $100 bills under your mattress, or B, Bitcoin. Which one do you trust more?
You know, I would generally speaking probably go for the dollar, because as we've talked about before, you know, the thing with Bitcoin. Extreme volatility.
Extreme.
At least in the last 6 months. I mean, I'm looking at a six-month chart right now. Bitcoin started 6 months ago. Bitcoin was at 150. It went up to just under $1,200. Then in December, it was down to 500. Then in January, it went back up to 900. Then with this little dip, it went down to 400. And now it's back up to almost 600. Yeah, that's a lot of
Of volatility. And the reason that you're putting your money into this damn thing for the most part is because you're worried about the volatility in your own fucking currency in the country in the first place. And I mean, shit, that doesn't really help. I mean, it helps the evasion point that you're talking about. But, hey, if you're able to move a large amount of actual bills, you have the actual physical bills, do you really give a fuck? No. So, hey, that's why, you know, there's 500 euro notes. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, and actually, as we're recording right now, it's at about 555.
555.
On Bitstamp again. Like your results may vary depending on which exchange you look at.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think that I would use it for certain things, but I tell you what, I'd be a little bit scared. I mean, think about it. Okay, great. I want to transfer $100,000 from here to Europe, right? So let me say I turn it into Bitcoin, right? Yep. Fuck, it could be that by the moment I go to fucking do the transaction, it's worth half.
Well, or double. It typically hasn't moved quite that fast, but yeah, okay, yeah, it depends.
Maybe I lose 10-15%. Would that be something that could happen?
Maybe. So I'm looking, for instance, and I'm looking at what these are. These look like 15-minute bars. So a couple hours ago, there was a 15-minute bar that ranged from 547 to 565 or so, or 562 or so. No, 570. So that's a pretty big chunk, 540 something to 570 in the course of 15 minutes.
Yeah, I would say. Especially, say, if you're trying to close the transaction.
Well, you know, when you're doing those transactions, you have to both agree, like during the transaction, that you're actually going to agree to an amount of bitcoins. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, unless you get the other party to accept Bitcoin, yeah. I mean, that would be the thing. You would have to get the other party to accept Bitcoin. Yeah,
I mean, fundamentally, this is how these transactions work. You agree on a price on bitcoins. Now, when you do so, you probably say, this price is only good for 10 minutes.
Right. That's the thing. Yeah, so, well, anyway, well, the stability of Bitcoin, not exactly great.
Hey, but you know, the $50 worth of Bitcoin I bought, still worth $25.
Now, you gotta admit, though, this whole thing, let's face it, man. I mean, come on, this whole thing, talk about Mickey Mouse. I mean, really? How the hell could they not detect that? What percentage of their Bitcoin got stolen? 10%?
Let me put it in another way. I've heard that it's not just 10% of what was at this exchange.
Right, it's 10% of the total Bitcoins in existence.
I heard 6% of total Bitcoins in existence.
Okay, it's still, I mean, you want to talk about, Jesus, what kind of Mickey Mouse fucking place is this?
You know, I would be pretty thrilled if I did a heist where I got a hold of 6% of all dollars in existence.
Yeah, you imagine that? Jesus! I mean, you talk about a heist! Damn! I mean, fuck! And that massive an amount of theft went unnoticed. I mean, for real? I mean, I think this really impacts Bitcoin because of the amount and how massive it was and how long it went without them noticing
it. So I just want to point out that at the current price, which is, of course, down there where it was, with the estimates of just how much Bitcoin was lost, we're talking about $400 million.
I mean, Jesus Christ. That's a truckload of money, dude.
Yes, it is.
I mean, how much did Mt. Gox? I mean, how much did Mt. Gox control? I guess of it. I mean, shit. I mean, they must have what? Did they have like 50% of all Bitcoin deposits or something?
Somewhere around that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that explains how it could be that massive. I mean, fuck. Yeah. Well, they're not really getting my vote of confidence. Yeah. I mean, shit. Give me a break.
I don't see why.
It's like, I guess, you know, like, hey, you know, I got to talk to Brandy and I'm going to tell her that you decided to move all the paychecks into.
Yeah, well, and you know, hey, you know, there are indications that, you know, some of these other Bitcoin operations are significantly better capitalized, better run. They're significant, like, well-known players who have invested in them, things like that. So, you know, Mt. Gox might be an outlier, but the problem is you ended up with a currency where 50% or so of the currency was being controlled by people who obviously
were incompetent,
or at least were over their heads.
Yes, significantly. Yes. You know,
in over
their way heads. Over their heads.
Yeah, so we'll see. Okay, let's take a break. And we'll be back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now back to the show. Okay, we're back. So, you know, before we get on to next segment, I just want, just as an offhand thing, did you know what Miles O'Brien used to be, the CNN science reporter?
Yeah.
You remember him? Did you see he lost an arm?
How the hell did he lose an arm?
He apparently dropped, he was transporting, he was finishing up an assignment in Japan or somewhere, and he had, you know, big crates full of like camera equipment and stuff and like this, and he dropped one of them on his arm. And he was like, hey, you know, this really hurts. This sucks, but you know, this isn't a big deal. I don't have to go to an emergency anywhere. I'll put some ice on it. I'll go back to my hotel room, whatever. And then like, you know, it took him a while. And then he eventually, like when it wasn't getting better, he was like, oh, I'll go to the doctor. His like arm was starting to swell up and stuff. And it turned out like whatever damage was done was actually pretty severe. And they were like, we got to take you into surgery, guy. And like, they took him into surgery. And then while that was going on, there were complications. And they're like, you know, you either die or we take your arm. And he lost his arm.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
That's one hell of a way of losing your arm.
Yeah. So if you
hit your arm hard, basically you're trying to tell me, don't fuck around with it.
Don't fuck around with it. Yeah. Like, and you can see, if you go to milesobrien.com, that's his personal blog. The most recent post is, just a flesh wound. And he outlines this whole thing, but yeah.
Oh man. Well, that was brutal.
Yeah. So he lost his left arm.
Well,
or at like the elbow or something, but still, you know,
yeah, still, it's my arm.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't want to do that. And of course, ever since I've read the story, like I'm just walking around. I haven't hit my arm or anything, but like my arm starts to ache, and I'm like, hey, wait a second, you know, because it's like it's the psychological thing because you see it. It's like, oh God. But anyway, yeah, he started his story like, yeah, I wish I had a good story as to how this happened, but you know, I basically just dropped shit on my arm.
Wow. Well, so moral of the story is, don't drop shit on your arm.
I guess so. Or at least if you do, go see a fucking doctor.
Go see a doctor.
Like, you know, and I remember.
Well, how long did he wait?
Looks like 2 days.
Jeez, it's not that long.
No. He says the next day after it happened, his arm was sore and swollen, but seemingly no worse. Then that night, things got worse, and in the morning, he asked the hotel for a referral to a doctor.
No, so he didn't really, like, you know, putz around about it. I mean, you know, he was pretty, I mean, that's pretty diligent.
Yeah, you could see, but you know, like if you have a painful and swollen limb, I don't know. I could see like no.
Well, but he only waited like 24, 48 hours. I mean, let's face it. You get. I mean, I've gotten hit. Look, I mean, I remember about 7, 8 years ago. I mean, I went and I took a fall off the back of our boat. All right. Yeah. I mean, I took a really bad fall. I mean, well, my wife thought that I got killed. That bad a fall. Okay. All right. Our boat was backing up. I was at the back of the boat. I fell off the back of the boat. Okay. Now, let me correct this. The boat was not backing up at that point, but my wife thought it was. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, there was another boat coming in the other direction. I could feel that I was falling. So instead of waiting for the other boat to go there, me slipping and basically getting crushed by the other boat, I threw myself into the water. I was like, I just split second. I said, screw it. I gotta go. Otherwise, it's gonna be worse. So my wife's freaking out. Okay, and when I fell, I mean, I really hit my arm really hard. And I mean, it took me I didn't go to the doctor. We were in the Bahamas. I mean, we were in the middle. We were in a place that had no electricity, no nothing. I mean, we were literally nowhere. I mean, for me to get to emergency medical service, we did have a small speedboat with us, but shit, it would have taken, I mean, at least 8 hours, 10 hours.
Right.
Okay. For me to get to anywhere. Okay. With any medical care. It hurt, but I left it and let it go. And I went to a doctor when I got back, but that was, I will say, about a week later. Okay, and it was just a sprain, a shoulder sprain or whatever, and I got into a sling, and I had to get the physical therapy, but, I gotta admit, Miles hit his arm, I may not have thought nothing of
and,
it.
And I'll fess up, too. I don't like going to the doctor. About 15 years ago, I'm not one for athletic activities, but I went with a friend of ours. It was our friend Chris. He took me skiing. And,
oh my God, yes, I remember.
And I'd done this a couple times before and had fun, and I stayed on the bunny slopes, and it was nice fluffy snow and blah, 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 and it went well, and I enjoyed it. This time, the weather was marginal. It was freezing rain. The surface was not nice, soft, fluffy snow. It was a little bit icy, and the bunny slope was closed, and so he convinced me to go sort of on the next level up, which was above my skill level, which is basically zero. You know, I have the same skiing skill level as a 3-year-old. and so I ended up, repeatedly, going head over heels. And a couple different times I landed on my shoulder. The last time I landed on my shoulder, it hit pretty bad, the ski patrol actually offered to take me down on their little whatever it was. And I'm like, no. And I walked down the rest of the hill and I'm like, fine, whatever. And I went back to, my hotel room, and it hurt a lot, and I realized, that at dinner I was sort of making fun of, like, it doesn't hurt as long as I don't like do this. And I like moved my arm and that would hurt. And I'm like, okay, but whatever, it's nothing. I don't have to see anybody, whatever. And I continued to do nothing, although it was a little bit sore, and but I didn't fully realize until about, almost a month later, I went to a drive-through ATM, and I realized at that point that I could not lift my arm up in order to stick the card in the little slot.
Oh my God.
It was my left arm. And so finally I went to a doctor and they're like, you tore your rotator cuff or something like that. And there was nothing to do about it really other than physical therapy, unless, I wanted to do surgery. So I've never had anything done with it. But to this day, 15 years later, I have less mobility in my left arm and it aches under certain situations. But could it easily have been more serious? And I still would have been like, it's nothing. And this is not an uncommon thing, especially among people of our generation. And maybe I maybe is being a little stereotypically here, but among males who are like, it's nothing. I can deal with this. I'll pop some Advil. It'll be fine. When really you should be going fucking seeing a doctor.
Yes.
And so, you know, in worst case scenario, they say, you know, go back and take some Advil. You know, but maybe there's something more serious. And if you don't go in and look, you never know.
That's right. Anyway, all right. So
anyway, let's do WhatsApp and finish up with Venezuela. So
all right.
I talked a little bit about WhatsApp, but I basically said, you know, I know Yvonne is going to say the same thing say about
I'm
going to
say this very quickly because we're running so long.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, bottom line is Facebook's out of their fucking mind. $19 billion.
Hey, this is what I said you were going to say.
I know. Well, just bears repeating. They're fucking out of their minds. I mean, my whole thing is, okay, for the most part, if it's not acquiring users, they've got overlap on, I guarantee you that almost anybody who's got WhatsApp has Facebook, all right?
But they may use them for different things.
True. No, totally agree. I mean, they're two different applications. Is it technology cutting edge? No. So what the hell are they buying for $19 billion?
Maybe,
I still don't understand.
I've heard a few things. Maybe they're just doing the buy the competition before it's serious enough to like impact you type of thing.
Yeah, but $19 billion? I mean, how much revenue could you generate in ads and fucking WhatsApp?
Well, maybe they don't want...
And here's the other question.
Maybe they don't give a shit about the revenue. They just want to make sure that some other company other than Facebook isn't getting it. Like, maybe they think that WhatsApp over the course of...
That's all fine and dandy, but my point is, the reason why I seriously said, well, what the fuck this looks like when AOL Instant Messenger bought ICQ? What the fuck did that bring to AOL? Nothing. I mean,
It effectively killed ICQ.
Yes, it did. But the reality is that, let's face it, look at what happened to AOL stock years later because of doing this kind of shit. Okay? I mean, come on. I don't see the value. I mean, $19 billion, Sam. Dude.
For an employee with 55 employees, yes.
Yes, and I guarantee you it doesn't even have a couple hundred million in revenue. Tops. Okay? All right. I mean, it's just such a massive overpayment. OK, yes, that's why I said we do have a fucking bubble in technology. We do.
I'll point out that Zuckerberg was asked the other day about, like, are they looking at Snapchat, too? And his answer was, when you just bought something for $19 billion, maybe you're done for a little while.
I would think. And then Zuckerberg said, oh, they're worth even more than $19 billion. Really? Based on what? I'm still... What the hell? Look, my wife...
Apparently, they have a lot of penetration in WhatsApp? A lot of countries that Facebook isn't as deeply embedded in.
Totally true. Do you use WhatsApp?
No. I downloaded it once to check it out about six months ago.
My wife uses it a lot. Mm-hmm. All right? Okay, because her friends in Colombia, they use WhatsApp because it's just so much cheaper than SMS or anything else, right? Right. Okay,
and that's the story all over the world. Like, I downloaded it, and like one person in my address book also had an account on it, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, and I never logged onto it again. But but I don't have a lot of friends, you know, in all of these places around the world where SMS costs are prohibitive.
Right, but that's my point. What happens if SMS costs go down? Which I'm going to bet you it's going to happen. That's going to collapse in the next 24 months. T-Mobile fired the opening shot. They decided that they're no longer charging any international roaming fees. They're not charging any more international data roaming to a certain extent. Okay,
the U.S. isn't the right market to look at anyway, because for the most part, most people in the U.S. with smartphones and such anyway have plans that include unlimited SMS. Yeah.
Right. So it's only really worked outside the U.S. where phone plans have been onerous. But my point is that companies, the mobile companies, are going to wise up at some point and say, fuck it. Well, we can't just keep charging like this. We got to start giving this away, too. So how long does this window that they have right now really work? I just don't. It's. I don't see the justification. It's just to me to see, hey, I got $20 billion I can spend. Fuck it, I'm going to do it. It seemed like deal fever. Okay, in my opinion.
Well, and what I said last week was basically this is yet another example of people who have a shitload of money and have no fucking idea what to do with it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay, that is totally right. So
okay, enough on WhatsApp. I know you really want to talk about Venezuela, and we're low on time, or we're way over time. So let's take a break. We'll come back, and we'll let you rant on Venezuela for a while. We'll be back after this. Okay, we're back, Yvonne. So you've mentioned, you know, and there have been all kinds of things going on in Ukraine, and there have been ups and downs in there. But I've noticed that on Facebook, you've been posting updates on Venezuela like every few hours. And obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on in Venezuela, too. I mentioned the stuff going on in Thailand, too. I don't even know really what's going on there, but I know there's stuff going on. But, you know, assuming most of our listeners have been somewhat paying attention to Ukraine because it's been in the mainstream news a lot, give us an update on Venezuela. What the hell's going on there and why should we care?
Well, I guess the main reason is, well, it is in our hemisphere. It's a lot closer. They've been a big trading partner of ours. I mean, we used to buy a lot of their oil. We don't as much anymore. Basically, the main reason
fracking.
Is because that's exactly right.
North Dakota. Fracking.
North Dakota, Texas, all over the place has significantly reduced the demand for their oil. Okay. It's been replaced by a lot of domestic production. Look, Venezuela is in a complex situation, okay? Generated by about 14 years of the regime that Hugo Chavez put in place. This is a regime that started with basically he called it socialist my ass. He's not a fucking socialist. He took out a certain group of oligarchs to replace him with his own oligarchs. Okay. Now the difference is that in order for him to stay in power, okay, he was smarter. What he decided to do is let me go and let me give some money to the poor. Whereas the old oligarchs didn't give any. Okay? So let me buy their votes by giving them something. So they'll feel that they've got more. Okay? That's basically what he did. And so he bought a lot of votes that way. He gave health care and a lot of stuff. And listen, I think it was an important thing. He needed to do that. But the problem is that he did this at the same time that he was just basically stealing the country blind. Okay? Just stealing everything he could get a hold of. For a PDVSA, Venezuelan Petroleum Company. Okay, it had before he took over. It was actually one of the most cost-efficient producers in the world. 22,000 employees produced over 3.something million barrels of oil a day. Compared to like say the Mexican oil companies or like the Saudis or whatever, they did it with like 25% or like 20% as many employees to produce a barrel of oil. All right, very vertically integrated. They own Citgo in the U.S. What they did is they bought Citgo. Their oil was a very heavy crude. They needed refineries specifically that could handle the crude. So what they generated is their own demand. They had Citgo set up to handle the Venezuelan crude so they could go out and basically they could produce gasoline. So therefore, they had built in their own demand to their product. The system would work perfectly. Well, when Hugo Chavez took over, he was demanding that basically all the executives at PDVSA basically bow to me, or otherwise you're not going to be employed. And oh, by the way, all this investing you do in like making sure that everything works or whatever, I don't give a fuck. I need you just to give me money, and I want this much money, and I don't care if you stop investing in anything to do that over time. So basically, he ransacked that over a period of time. He fired almost all the old employees because they went on strike. They were refusing to follow a lot of his orders. They went on strike. He fired them all. He replaced them with a whole bunch of people, didn't know what the fuck they're doing. So during a period of time when the oil prices shot up from like 30, 40 barrels of oil to over 100 barrels of oil, Venezuela didn't see as much revenue as they would because their oil production fell by 40%. Because all those people, by the way, that got fired, you know where they are?
Where?
Guess. They're in North Dakota and they're in freaking Canada pumping oil over there. There are such huge expat communities of Venezuelan oil employees. They're in Canada and they're up in North Dakota. All right, a massive migration. They were some of the smartest people in the oil business. They got recruited. They were got thrown tons of money. They said, "Fuck it, fine, we'll leave." So the way that they're sticking it to Venezuela is by basically saying, oh, okay, great. You didn't want us? You think you guys? Fine. You go have a whole bunch of bozos run the company. We're going to fucking like produce all this oil up here. We're going to fuck you out of your business, which is precisely what they've been doing, which has basically been driving Venezuela's revenue from oil down, okay? And right now, a combination of all this ransacking together with he didn't just limit himself to the oil company. If he wanted a business that was doing something that he needed and they refused to cut the deal that the government wanted, he would go out. He would either harass them out of business or somehow take over the business by expropriating it. He was doing that in a lot of businesses. One of the fields that he impacted a lot was agriculture. Okay, and one of the reasons why there are food shortages in Venezuela is because he drove a lot of the farmers in Venezuela out of business by demanding that they do things that were just impossible. They couldn't produce and they couldn't give him the stuff at the prices he was demanding. So he wound up taking over their lands. He wound up driving them out of business. And now what you've got in Venezuela is, if you've seen, I've posted some of these. Where, look, supermarket shelves are empty. And this is something that started happening the last time I was in Venezuela, was like 8 years ago. And this was already happening then. It's just something that's gotten worse and worse and worse. The other part is the rampant crime.
Okay.
Because Hugo Chavez really, really instigated class warfare at a massive scale. When I was there, I saw him on TV because he basically took every competing television station that was local off the air, and you flipped the channel on every fucking channel on TV, and all he was is over there pumping his fucking Orwellian propaganda. But one of the things that I heard him say, and I heard him say it himself, is that basically that anybody who has any more than you is an oligarch, and you should feel that you can take stuff away from them because they have more than you.
Did that include himself?
I think a couple of days later he backtracked himself after he said that because he realized it may have included himself. But he has unleashed a class warfare that has never been seen before.
Okay, so let's fast forward. You've been giving a lot of background, which I appreciate, because last week, you know, I complained about how it's hard to get background. It's easy to get what happened this week.
So you've got rampant crime.
Yeah.
You've got no food. You've got an economy that is collapsing because their hard currency imports are going out of style. The people are pissed off, all right? They're pissed off because the crime is out of control. Venezuela is more dangerous than Iraq right now, okay? Really. The murder rate is higher than Iraq. You're more likely to go and get killed in Caracas than you are in Baghdad. I mean, you're safer in Baghdad than in fucking Caracas. It's insane, okay? So, all right, people got upset. There was a rape that happened at a university that was near the Colombian border a couple of weeks ago. They went out and protest. The government response was basically to tear gas them and shoot them. Okay, the protesters. And what that really instigated was people found out about it. And they said, "Fuck, dude, we can't even protest when shit goes wrong." And it's just spurred more and more protests because people are just fed up with this shit. It's just been building. The people have been angry for a long time, but they didn't have an event that finally like coalesce them into something. And this whole thing, what happened at the university, I think it was just finally the tipping point of this massive rage that people have had over the fact that you can't walk the streets, okay, because you're going to get shot, okay?
So let me ask you a comparison, you know, because we talked about, you know, in Ukraine, it looks like there's a very heavy ethnic component to this. There looks like there's a significant division with the country. There's a bunch of people who want to go one way. There's a bunch of people who go another way. There's talk about a civil war. There's talk about regions like breaking off. In Venezuela, is there, you know, a significant group on both sides, or is it basically a very small elite and a whole bunch of people rising up, or is it geographically oriented at all, or is it just everywhere? What's the deal?
It's everywhere, number one. Mm-hmm. And I think that at this point, because I still truly believe that the last couple of times they had manipulated the elections, okay? Look, the supplier of their software for the fucking elections, there's a whole thing, which bottom line, they did not get a majority vote. I am like in my 100% believe that they manipulated the software that tabulated the results in order for them to declare themselves a winner. Over 60% of the people in Venezuela, in my opinion, okay, are completely against the regime. They probably got a hardcore of like 20-25%. Okay, that is backing them.
Which by the way, 20-25 is not a majority, but it's not an insignificant number.
It's not an insignificant
number. It's not like you're talking 1%.
No, it's not 1%, but it's certainly not the majority. And I think that you do have a hardcore that has been co-opted by the things that happened before, like I mentioned. Look, for many years, Venezuela was run by a lot of people that didn't give a shit about the poor. They really, you know, really played a lot to the small middle class and the upper class in Venezuela. And when things were good 30 years ago, this was fine. But, you know, as the economy slid for many reasons over the years, it was not good. And people had a right to feel that they didn't, that they were being, they weren't getting what they deserved, okay? Hugo gave a lot of these people something that was better than the nothing they were getting before, but yet at the same time, it's been at a massive cost to the overall country at this point. You know, because, you know, he did it, yeah, I gave you a little bit, but, you know, it's like almost like the old pirate thing. It's like when they divide the booty, one for you, three for me, one for you, five for me, one for you, eight for me. I mean, great, you gave me one, but Jesus Christ, you're stealing so much that what the hell does it matter? I mean, you're bankrupting the whole country. And, you know, yeah, it's like, oh, no, they're not stealing. Dude, I think the best pictures, by the way, because I love the pictures. Did you see the pictures of the Ukrainian president's house?
Yes, I did.
I mean, you know, that kind of ransacking is going on in Venezuela on a massive scale. That's the level of stuff. I saw, I don't know how many times, Hugo Chavez with expensive $20,000, $30,000 watches on. All right? Okay? I mean, he fucking showed up on TV wearing a $30,000 watch, man. He didn't give a fuck. You know? It's like, what the hell? Dude, I mean, it is estimated that Hugo Chavez's family has accumulated a net worth in the billions of dollars. All right? Yeah, you don't do that by just being fucking president of a country. All right? So, I think that these, I got to tell you something. If the problem that the president has, he's set off a vicious cycle. Because if he had responded to the protests in some other way, look, like last summer, there were protests in Brazil over a whole bunch of stuff, right? Social injustice and whatever. The president of the country, being a totally different country than this, sat down, listened to the concerns, offered to do things. You know, he said, you know, you're right, we haven't done these things right. Let's work on making a better country. This guy has responded by saying that all these people are fascists and by responding with violence. And he's accused Colombia and the U.S. of co-opting these people into this.
So I was actually going to ask that. In both Ukraine and Venezuela, there's been talk about, you know, is this really, you know, is there some element of this that's a covert U.S. operation to destabilize the government?
Not at all. The people were fucking pissed off for a long time. I mean, I have been talking to so many, I have a lot of Venezuelan friends. That's why I've been putting all those updates. Hey, this shit has been going on for a long time. They've been fed up for a long, long time. I mean, they just had not exploded, but they were just angry. Angry. Extremely angry. Now, this was not co-opted at all. They didn't need any co-opting.
Maybe a little prodding?
I don't... Maybe some support after it happened. Maybe you got some of that. Maybe. I'm going to say, I don't even know. But I guarantee you that it took no prodding for this thing to explode. It was just there, ready to just go. And the reality is that the guy who set it off was himself, was Maduro himself. He's the one that set the fucking armed guards to go and, like, beat on the fucking students. He did it himself.
So, you know, things have been moving very rapidly in Ukraine with changes in government and, you know, the Russians are trying to decide how to respond and blah, blah, blah. You know, we're not quite there in Venezuela yet. Do you think if we talk again next week, we will be, or are things at a plateau, or are things continuing to explode?
No, they've been continuing. Every day this week, there's been more protests. They have not stopped. I just don't know.
Do you have any thoughts on what the end game is?
Listen,
here?
It could happen that he collapses. Look, 12 years ago.
Or could it also happen that he cracks down completely and consolidates his power?
No. No way. Mm-mm. I don't think he's got the support. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that's become noticeable is that in these speeches, he sways back and forth between crackdown or negotiation. Right. He doesn't even know how the fuck to respond anymore. All right. So I don't think I he does not have nowhere nearly enough support to go like crack down and take everybody down. The problem is that the protests have grown so much bigger than I think he thought they are. They've basically taken over almost every major Venezuelan city. Okay. That he doesn't have. He doesn't have the enough resources to go and mount such a massive crackdown in order to take him down. No, I don't think so. So, but you know how these things are. Look at Assad and how long he's held into power, right?
Yep.
Could he fall? Could he not fall? I thought the guy in Ukraine was going to still hold on, and all of a sudden, boom. I mean, the son of a bitch disappeared. Right? He just ran off. I mean,
And there have been, you can point to numerous examples over the last few years, because this has been like almost a normal pattern at this point. People don't like their government. The protests get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then something happens. You know, right. whether it's, you know, what happened in Libya that is goes into open warfare and then is the guy is overthrown and the Western government's got involved, or it's Syria where we have a civil war that's been going on for months, or we have Egypt where, you know, the guy resigned and blah blah blah. There have been a number right. of the, or even in the U.S. we had Occupy and then we cracked down on them and they went away. Right. I don't think they were ever threatening the stability of the U.S. government, but there was very parallel in structure. So this is almost a normal pattern now, but it can go all kinds of different directions depending on all kinds of local dynamics.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and I just don't know. I mean, I just don't know. I mean the rhetoric from his hasn't died down, and here's a problem. He seems to want it to get worse, okay? And the reason I say that is because the candidate, the last candidate for president went and gave a speech where he was advocating for people to stop the protests right now because of the violence and some of the other stuff and whatever, all right? And you would have thought that if he wanted to fuse that situation, that he would have broadcast that information. But he made sure that that was not broadcast on any television or media channel in Venezuela. His call to calm. So, what does that say about what he's thinking? I mean, if he was thinking of trying to defuse the situation, he would have probably broadcast that in every chance he got. And he chose not to. because he has really, I mean, let's face it, this is not a democracy. This is really, truly a dictatorship. I mean, he does control all the media. You know, so if he's not broadcasting that, then to me, it seems like he wants to escalate the situation. To what extent, I'm not sure. And I don't know if he really understands what the hell that means. Okay.
Do you think it's like escalate to make it easier to crack down?
Yes. I think he thinks that it may be easier to crack down if it escalates. Yes. But I don't think he's going to get that far with a freaking crackdown like he thinks he's going to be. Because I got to tell you, I think at some point, the Venezuelan military, because this has happened before, is going to be, even though I know there's been a lot of purges in that military, I don't know how much stomach they're going to have to go and like just start shooting at their own people. How much? I mean, they've done some, but it's not been massive. I don't know how much stomach they're going to have to do a ton of that.
Well, and that's basically the point at which things fell apart in Ukraine as well, is there was almost 80 people killed in a couple day period, with apparently orders of the orders given basically to just start shooting protesters. There's some indication that it was sharpshooters. It wasn't just random shooting. It was sharpshooters from the edges shooting people in the crowds. And apparently a good deal of at some point an order was given, just stop, leave, retreat, and then it was over in a matter of hours.
Yeah. And so that's the thing. I mean, I just, he has been escalating it. We'll see. So it just depends on where he goes. I think that if he goes that route of the additional escalation, then this may self-destruct a lot faster than we think. I mean, there is a news report that I'm looking at right now that they've been having some talks. But I haven't seen him go far, so I don't know what the outcome of these is going to be. So
one more aspect before we say goodbye. You mentioned a couple times that you're sort of pissed that all the coverage has been Ukraine, and not as much about Venezuela. What are your thoughts? I mean, obviously there's important things going on in both places. And I guess the reason Ukraine is front and center is because of the Russia angle. At least that's my impression. What do you think? What's going on here?
I think it's a bunch of bullshit. I mean, I don't know. I honestly kept scratching my head. I don't get it. I mean, you've got massive protests. You've got a government that is a country that is in our backyard. There's quite a lot of interest. There were demonstrations all over the U.S. that happened in support of Venezuela, like all over. All right. I mean, I drove down my street over here, and there were like people on the street with Venezuelan flags on Saturday. There were protests around the world, not just here in support of Venezuela. There were in Spain, in almost every Latin American country, in Mexico. I mean, seriously, I'm sorry, but I didn't see like people going out spontaneously into the streets of fucking like wherever in the U.S. in support of the fucking Ukraine.
No, but
my point is that it's not that I'm dissing the Ukraine. My point is that shit, you've got people in the U.S. that are going onto the streets and protesting this, and the news media is not covering it.
But
they're covering the Ukraine.
Well, I think the difference here, and I really think this is the key here, I mean, is that we got, on the other side of this, we got Vladimir Putin, and we've got him like rattling chains. And or there's some rumors that he was actually instrumental in getting the guy to leave the country, but there are other rumors that they're beefing up the presence in the Russian base in the Crimea, getting ready to defend the Crimean peninsula from being part of this takeover of the rest of the Ukraine. They're making noises about this being illegitimate. There's talk about the Crimea breaking off from the rest of the country and the Russians providing military assistance. So I think the worry here is that the Ukraine is a situation that has the potential of escalating militarily to an international confrontation. And I don't think anybody thinks that about Venezuela. They think it can explode all at once. It's going to stay internal to Venezuela.
I guess. Maybe that's why. But, okay, great. But, I'm sorry, but there's been... I mean, we put a few newscasts. I mean, there was no coverage of it. None. All right? So, yes. Do I think that maybe Ukraine, probably, because there's more violence and stuff, maybe deserve to get first? For yeah. But, I mean, I would go to places and I could find no coverage of it whatsoever. So... I mean, I don't know. I don't get it. So.
Okay. Well, I think that is more than enough for today.
Yes,
so let's wrap this up. And thanks, everybody, for joining us as usual. And you know how to get in touch with us. Abelsmay at Abelsmay. Abelsmay and I am Bo on Twitter. You know, tell us stuff. Tell your friends. Review us. All that stuff. And, you know, have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Yvonne.
Good night.
Later.